Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica, and today we're not just embarrassed, we're also drinking.
It's driven us to drink. I'm having a mezcal. How about you?
I am also having a mezcal.
The only Oaxacan Star Trek podcast.
It's true. We're really trying to break into that super valuable Oaxacan demo. For sci-fi fans.
Yeah, there's just a huge pie wedge that hasn't been pandered to yet, and we're here to do it.
I'm excited to do a deeper dive into alcohol as we witness any kind of drinking at all occur on the show, because we haven't really seen that yet, have we?
I think the only time I can think of is when Lwaxana Troi blessed us with her presence.
Yeah. Yeah, I was drinking too.
It's a guiding principle on which Starfleet is based. Now, if you can't find it within yourself to stand up, tell the truth, you don't deserve to wear that uniform.
So we've got season one, episode 24, We'll Always Have Paris. Ben, have you ever been to Paris?
I have. I suspect that the set design department has not.
City of broad shoulders, right?
The city of pastel hues and badly painted backdrops.
This episode did not make me want to go. I've never been, but no. Good Lord.
So we start with some more of the same bad scoring as the last episode. Bad music. And what's going on is that the Enterprise is traveling through some sector, and Picard is doing some fencing practice with a very handsome gentleman who I don't think we'll ever see again.
I thought for a moment it was Jake.
Oh, yeah, like the older Jake.
The further grooming of Jake.
Yeah. I thought maybe I thought it was maybe the guy that he took on the holodeck in his detective novel episode.
Oh, right.
But then I realized it wasn't the same actor. And I was like, oh, that guy recovered from a bullet. Nope, different guy, you know.
Are we sure that this is or isn't a holodeck program, or do you think they have a full-fledged fencing, setup, like, gym in real life on the Enterprise?
I don't know. We definitely see this again, because there's an episode where he fights Whoopi Goldberg with a sword in there.
Right, right. And she's great.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I guess... Yeah, you sort of wonder if they have the ability to make a hologram of anything, why they would have any specialized rooms at all.
Right. Right. And not only specialized rooms, but any other rooms, period. Like,
right.
You could do all your science shit in a holodeck science room.
If the whole deck of a ship was just a huge holodeck, you could subdivide it any way you want. You don't need to have walls even, you know?
Yeah, that's real efficient, open concept office building shit right there.
That's what buyers are looking for. They like curb appeal, open concept, location, location, location.
I think they've really fucked up the whole building of the Enterprise, given what we're talking about here. Like, they're not going to be able to resell it for very much.
No,
with all these hard walls.
Yeah, those are load-bearing, you know? Those are not going to be cheap to take out. You're going to have to put in a beam.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just try getting the opinion of a Federation contractor in there when he starts poking around.
Unless you got the Property Brothers or someone in there to work with you on this, you're just going to have a tough time, you know? But anyways, as they're fencing, this effect happens where they're like saluting each other with swords, and it like doubles up in time. And they both sort of notice that something weird has happened, Picard and his opponent. And so Picard wipes some of the sweat off his brow and goes over and radios up to the bridge and ask what the fuck.
Picard to bridge.
Captain.
Number one, did something unusual just occur on the bridge?
And Riker says, yeah, we're feeling it too, man. You better get up here. So Picard bombs up to the
bridge.
Did
you feel that? Oh, yeah, I felt that.
Yeah. Was that good for you too, Riker?
Picard, in his sweat, rolls up to the bridge.
Yeah. Which I think is a weird, sparkly sword fight in uniform.
I think it's a pretty hot look. You know, like, why not take it easy? I think it's a little bit of a precursor to the whole captain in jacket look that we get in I don't know, like season 5 or something. He's got the suit jacket on.
Definitely. And I think that whenever, like, when we see Picard out of uniform, typically we're going with a real deep V. Like, he likes to show a lot of chest.
Or shirtless. So
this is an occasion where he's a little bit more covered up, which I think is good, you know?
Right. Right.
Just for variety. I'm not trying to slut shame him or anything.
No, you wouldn't do that.
No. I'm very Picard sex positive.
So the captain's on the bridge and they start to get a distress call.
Right. And this is coming from Paul Mannheim, and it's a tape. It's not a live distress call, but this immediately puts Picard in a mood, and Troy is picking up on it big time. And he says, like, lay in a course, like, we got to go figure out what's going on here. And as he's, like, heading off the bridge to go put on his real uniform, Troy stops him and says, like, hey, like, why don't we dip into your office for a second and just talk about all of the huge feelings that you just had? And he said, no, you can say this out in the open. And then he immediately regrets saying that to her.
Yeah, jeez.
Because she really puts his shit on blast, like, right in front of all of the bridge crew.
Pretty much the worst thing that can happen to you is when Troy gives you a zup and is like, hey, can we talk about what you're feeling?
Yeah, it's like a teacher saying, stay after class. Like, you're right. Not going to be able to focus in that class because you're just going to be wondering what's going on the whole time.
Yeah, that moment ends up being a little more benign than is sold because Picard immediately clams up as soon as the conversation starts. Which he's is like, I'm cool.
Yeah, I mean, but he's lying to her, and that's evident. And that's like, maybe not what he wants to be, like the kind of airs he wants to be putting on around his staff, you know?
Right.
Like, ooh, Picard's got a secret, is not like what you want the people that work for you to be thinking.
Yeah. So the backstory here is this Dr. Mannheim guy was ejected.
This is like the third or fourth, like, nutty scientist with a German last name that we've encountered.
Not related to Mannheim Steamroller, I was disappointed to find out.
No, yeah. His Christmas album is not anywhere near as good.
Yeah, it's another shamed and kicked out science figure whose experiments were deemed either unsafe or unauthorized or dangerous by the Federation. And like Noonien and Soong just goes off and finds a planet somewhere to conduct his experiments in privacy. And
in his case, a planetoid.
Right, right. Which is a real piece of shit looking planet.
Yeah. I didn't hear that the first time. So when they pull up to it, and it's like, it's kind of like backlit when they show up because it's in orbit of a binary star. I was like, what the fuck is this? What? Yeah. Where are they?
It's like something you dig out of a cat box. It's not looking great.
Yeah. I thought it was like a mistake. I literally wrote in my notes, what the fuck is on the view screen? But so there's going to be like a couple hours before they get to where Mannheim is at. And Picard decides to take a little trip down memory lane while they're en route. And so what he does is he goes and hits up the holodeck and has it create a program to simulate Café des Artistes before he left several years ago. And I guess he spent some time living in Paris before he took a commission as a starship captain. And he goes into this simulation of a cafe that literally doesn't look... It looks like the set design department not only has never been to Paris, but has never been to a cafe. Like, it is such a... It's like... I don't know. It's like the dining room in a cruise ship or something. But
yeah,
it's supposed to be in Paris.
Yeah, great call. Like, it just feels a little off. It's like a Disney Paris situation.
Yeah.
But literally the only thing that betrays its location is the mat showing the weird looking version of the Eiffel Tower with some sort of subway tube crawling underneath it, and the French sounding accordion music. I guess future accordions look like cow milkers that you just sort of stroke like you're masturbating them.
Yeah.
I couldn't take my eyes off of the new accordion guy. Like, he was just walking around jerking his accordion music onto everyone.
Yeah. Get that thing away from me, man. I know this is Paris, but come on.
Yeah, jeez. God, do they have to sexualize everything?
Well, no sooner has that sexual innuendo happened than two young women sit down, and one of them is complaining that some boy isn't there to see her, and her friend leaves, and the one that's left is basically as naked as it's legal to show somebody on TV. Like, she is in a very revealing bit of costume, and she asks Picard if she reminds him of anybody, and we sort of start to pick up on the fact that long ago Picard had sort of a fling in Paris, and the woman that he loved and he did like had a missed connection on Craigslist and at this cafe. You think Craigslist will still exist in the 24th century?
I don't know. I found this scene really insincere and fake. Maybe the most science fiction scene that we've ever come across on the show, because these are supposed to be French people, and here they are greeting a stranger like in a friendly manner,
right?
And not ignoring them or getting upset that they aren't speaking the language,
right?
I don't know. That was a leap too far as far
the
as suspending my disbelief.
The ancient language of French?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, this season has already doubled back on French being an ancient language that nobody has heard of.
The first duty of every Starfleet officer is to the truth. Scientific truth, or historical truth, or personal truth.
They get to this facility, and what is it called? Vandor 4? Something like that?
Oh, you know what? I don't even write down the weird names of the planets anymore in my notes. I just...
Man.
Does it really matter? Are we making a map here?
Maybe. I mean, we can't rule out that somebody at home isn't. Anyways, Vandor 4 is this planetoid in orbit around a binary star system. Seems like a real intense, hard place to live. And there's a couple of facilities. One of them is totally trashed. There's only two survivors left in the other one, and they finally make contact, and a woman is on the view screen, and Picard declines to identify himself. In fact, he's almost going to identify himself, and he doesn't.
This is the captain of the USS Enterprise.
Yeah, this is the first instance of some real background acting happening, too, because when he fails to do this, I think you get a close-up of Geordi and Data like, what?
What? And so this woman drops the shields, and they beam... I guess Dr. Manheim is you know, in rough shape. So she drops the shields, and they beam him to sick bay. And Dr. Crusher starts to go to work on Dr. Manheim, who is... in a bad way. Like, he looks all right, but he's convulsing and like,
he looks like
delirious.
Evil John Lithgow.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good call. Or like John Lithgow's evil younger brother. Or
right.
Something.
Yeah. Yeah.
A little
sort
less
of
bald.
Cliffhanger era John Lithgow with a goatee.
Wouldn't this episode have been amazing if they'd gotten John Lithgow?
Yeah.
I think that might have been what really broke this episode and made it so forgettable and dumb.
Yeah, I mean, we hear a lot about the Manheim effect as it pertains to what the character is going through. But, God, the Lithgow effect, I think we can agree, serves to make every show better. Anything that he touches, I find, is better.
It's so entertaining, that guy.
Yeah.
So so the other person that they have beamed up is Janice, who is... the lady that Picard had his Craigslist misconnection with back in Paris. And she is really, like, delighted to see him. despite how nervous he is and reticent he is to kind of open up to her emotionally.
Yeah, she just drops power moves all over him. Like,
yeah.
She plays him like one of those cow milker accordions on the holodeck. Like,
totally.
Like she knows.
And this is the first time it's the first, like, if like when you talk about like status in character development, like this is something you talk about in improv all the time, like which character has what status mm-hmm. in a scene, and like your body language plays into it and stuff. I think this is the first time that Picard's status has been really noticeably below another character that wasn't an admiral or something like that.
Right, right.
You know? Like, he's the fucking boss all the time, and suddenly it's great. Like, he's like nervous to be around her. He's like, he doesn't quite know how to play it. She's like, she's so blithe. She's like, ha ha ha, Picard, it's so great to see you.
Who else would have charged to my rescue?
Because she's totally free, and in... You know, the thing that plays off of that is Picard is utterly not. He's surrounded by people he wants to keep a secret from.
Yeah.
He's got this Dr. Manheim guy who we figure at this point in the show is, like, the guy he lost her to. Like, everywhere he looks, he's seeing, like, threats to his leadership in different ways. And so that conflict is super acute.
For all of that acuteness, I found the depiction of Janice.
It's sort of a meat acute, isn't it?
Oh, boy.
All right, I'm gonna turn off the show.
Every dad joke that I've ever made on this show has just been nullified by that.
I'd like to apologize now.
Yeah. What I was gonna say is that for all of the interest that there is in the way Picard's character is going through this episode, I found it to be just like a stridently sexist depiction of this character, Janice. I mean, she's like such a bimbo, and she's like, she's been living in this science colony for, you know, a remote science colony with nothing but scientists, and they're like, what was Dr. Manheim working on? She's like, I don't know, I'm just a girl.
Like, oh, really? I didn't get that from her.
Oh man, she had nothing to tell them about what was going on, and like they had, like every time they had to get a piece of information about this time distortion that is going on, they had to like revive Manheim. She is useless. All she's there for is to be an object of Picard's affection.
I don't know. I guess I just assumed because she was the object of affection from a person like Picard or Manheim that she had something more to offer than just that. I found her to be sort of a, like, she was sort of Michelle Pfeiffering a little bit. Like, it always felt to me like she had something going on, even though she never demonstrated that. And I guess maybe that's just me projecting onto the character in a way, but I don't know. Like, Would she be there if she didn't have anything?
Well, man, I didn't like it. I felt like,
yeah,
you know,
I get that.
I think that there's definitely examples of women in history who have been sort of cowed out of their husbands' intellectual worlds and have, you know, and like her backstory is that she's been kind of isolated on this planet the entire time, and like essentially fallen out of love with her husband because he's so devoted to his work. And I think that's realistic, but I just don't,
yeah,
like,
I think we're trying to
look into a future that's, you know, hundreds of years from now, in which all of these ailments of society have been solved, you know, sexism, racism, hunger, want, all of that has been eliminated, and this is like an ideal society, and yet this woman is like unable to have a, like, she has no agency in the fact that, like, if her life is so miserable on this planetoid, she should leave, and if it's not, like, she should make friends or get involved in the research or something, you know.
She should join a club.
She has as much agency as anybody, you know. Like one of the premises of this show is that sexism has been defeated, and I don't, this character, this plot completely obliterates that.
I think
I don't know. I'm really getting on my high horse. We should just get
no.
Back
you're
to...
you're not. But I felt like in within the confines of the story, she thought she was getting something that she didn't end up getting by the end. Like I think
but she should have just been like, "Fuck you guys! I'm taking a runabout and I'm going back to Earth."
Yeah, but there is no runabout. She's on the planetoid and everyone's dead. Like
you don't think they brought a runabout?
I don't think so.
Damn it.
I don't know. She was probably excited for an adventure on the planetoid, and she thought she was going out there with a husband who loved her. I think you see this in real life all the time. Like you think you have a future ahead that's going to be one way, and then it just ends up not living up to your expectations. I don't think that is a necessarily sexist outcome. Its depiction could be, though, which I'm guessing is your main issue with this character.
Yeah. Here's hoping that she had a holodeck to retire to and a lot of the Riker collection of holo programs to enjoy herself in.
I imagine the box cover to the Riker collection is like hot pink cursive.
Yeah, like, no, it's like exactly neon. Like the Sex and the City DVD binder that my wife has. it's like hot pink, like velvety cover with the words inlaid.
Oh man, I think we have a new T-shirt idea, Ben. The Riker collection. Let's put that on the list.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
Basically, all that happens in this episode is that there's these time distortions that keep happening on a sort of regular basis, and they find out based on communication with other parts of Starfleet that they are happening across thousands of light years. And what they are the Mannheim effect, which is that two timelines will coexist in the same space. So
it's like when your Christmas lights are synced up to the music.
Yeah.
That is also the Mannheim effect.
Yeah, at one point, like Picard, Data, and Riker, I think, are like going to go get on the turbo lift to do something, and the doors open, and Picard, Data, and Riker are standing there, and they're like, "Whoa, that's us from a couple seconds ago. Crazy."
Yeah, what's interesting is that both versions are aware. Like, it's not just a replay from a couple of seconds ago. They can interact with them.
Yeah, they're like, "What are you guys doing here?" High five. You guys are looking good.
What would have happened if they touched each other? Would that have been a, like, what is that thing called? God, you're going to have to edit so much of this. The thing when, if you go back in time and you meet yourself and you touch yourself, it causes a temporal
rift?
Yeah.
Like a rift in the time-space continuum?
How close were they to destroying the entire universe in that moment?
Yeah, man. And just think about what would have happened if two Rikers had gotten together.
You know, it's a real missed opportunity. Like, this is ostensibly a time travel episode in a very small way, and this is what they do with it. Like, God, it could have been so cool.
I feel like we say the phrase missed opportunity in every episode talking about season one.
Yeah, well put.
Just kept talking in one long, incredibly unbroken sentence, moving from topic to topic so that no one had the chance to interrupt. It was really quite hypnotic.
Mannheim wakes up long enough to kind of give some brief explanation that his experiments were involving gravity and time and universes, and he's going to give them some codes to get around the defense mechanisms inside the facility. But he's really fucked up. Like he's like kind of barely aware of his surroundings, and I guess he's like drifting in between timelines or something. So he's really having a hard time focusing on helping them. All he's able to basically explain is that there's an experiment that's sort of still running and it's running amok. And the only way to stop this time crisis is for Data to go down and shut down the experiment. Or I guess he doesn't say Data. Picard picks Data because Data like isn't confused by this like everybody else is.
Right, he's somehow going to be more impervious to the mindfuck that's got Mannheim all messed up in the sick bay. Like he'll right. be able to go down there and figure it out, which he shows, he demonstrates the ability to do. He beams down there. He gets through their weird defenses.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a scene here where Data dodges some laser fire.
Yeah, fun. Always fun to watch.
They do that thing that I love, which is stuntman dives behind a wall and then real actor appears from behind to show the face.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
Like, clearly not an actor, super fit, like, different body completely, like, jumping on a trampoline behind behind some barrier. And then there's Brent Spiner peeking around from the side. So great. So the way that Data needs to shut down this experiment, when he finally gets there, he sees that there's a big pedestal and there's a bunch of mirror-looking things.
Yeah, I thought this whole scene was really cool looking. Like all of the security stuff looked cool. The time rift itself is a cool effect.
The door made of fluorescent light tubes. That was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, good setup here.
And like Data's like patching the hole is, you know, he has to like use this gripping arm to pick up a canister of antimatter and carry it.
That was the worst though. That was like an old person's reacher grabber tool. Like that was for grandma to get a can from the top shelf of her pantry.
Yeah. Well, you know, let's just hope we never have to have our grandmas fix temporal rift problems.
Yeah. So as we might have predicted, Data's time kind of gets blown apart as he gets close to patching this rift. He splits into two other people. And they're all talking to each other. They're like, well, which one's the guy? Which one needs to do this? Yeah. And of course, it's the one in the middle.
Yeah, middle Data.
Only one of us is in the correct time continuum. Which one? It's me.
Middle Data hops up the steps, drops the little canister out of the reacher grabber tool, and he seals the rift.
I thought this was fun. I had so much fun watching this scene. This scene stole the show for me.
Yeah.
And Data just like he always has like the best action scenes because they can really go crazy with like what he's capable of doing.
They only have one stuntman, and it looks like Brent Spiner, so they got to use him.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty easy to make any stuntman look like him, though, right? You just put the weird grease paint all over the face and then
you stick him in the tan booth set to green.
So I guess fixing this rift is good enough to get Mannheim back on his feet, and he and Janice are very appreciative of the whole Enterprise crew for their help. And Mannheim apologizes to Janice for having been so laser focused on his work all these years, and I guess like the Federation is going to help them get their experiments back on track after everybody else died.
And he's like, "Oh yeah, I'm ready to get back down to the planetoid and continue this very important work." And you can see the light in Janice's eyes just sort of die once again. like they got to go down to that fucking planetoid.
Yeah.
It was sort of tragic to me.
Yeah. I mean, Mannheim is doing a classic abuser line on her where he goes like, "It's going to be totally different this time. I promise. Like, right. I'm going to be better." You know?
Yeah, I just need to keep working.
Yeah.
Stop bothering me.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, you knew when you married me that I was a cop first and a husband second.
It's like when your wife wants to go have dinner with some friends and you're like, "Not now, I'm recording a Star Trek podcast."
Exactly like that, Adam.
Yeah.
I think
we can understand Mannheim's deal.
Yeah, yeah. I really identify with that in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Make it so.
Before we go, Picard takes Janice to Café des Artistes in Holodeck Paris, and they one more time relive this moment from the past before Picard stood her up to go ship out and be a be a starship captaining adventure man. And
it's weird to me that that was a choice, you know?
Right.
Like we sort of glossed over a little bit of this backstory, but like there was a fork in Picard's road where he gets to have the woman of his dreams at the time, or he gets to go be a starship captain. And he's like, I'm going to go be a captain. See ya.
Yep.
Like, he could not have it all. Even in the future, Ben, yeah. He can't have it all.
He should have leaned in.
Yeah.
That's where he went wrong.
Yeah.
So, and then the last scene is like one of these ones where they try to sort of end it on a light note where they're like, oh, now we're going to go do shore leave. We're going to this planet. And there's some great place that serves blue drinks across from the other thing, and they're all trying to remember the name, and Picard goes,
it's called the Blue Parrot Cafe, and you're buying.
And it's like, ding, 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 like Picard is a jokester. It's a very weird moment.
It's weird, especially because it comes right on the heels of Picard basically reliving his worst heartbreak.
Yeah.
In spectacular fashion. Like, yeah. I don't know if I'd be in the mood to party at that point. Like, oh, I think, man, I'd want to go be alone.
Yeah.
I'd want to have Wesley beat me with fencing swords.
Blue drinks are only for when you're having the most fun.
Yeah. Ask any 40-year-old double divorcee in Vegas, and they'll tell you.
Yeah.
The blue drink's the jam.
Damok Angelad at Tanagra. Damok Angelad at Tanagra.
Not to make excuses for this episode, but you might not be surprised to learn that this was written in 5 days, because the production schedule butted right up against a significant writer's strike. So they got this script that was hatched in 5 days, and they started shooting, and they very quickly realized that they didn't have an ending. Several parts were missing. It was super fucked up. It was one of those, like, I know you know the feeling of getting to a set and you realize, like, we don't have the materials we need to actually make something here. It must have been terrifying. So what the producer and the VizFX guy did is they called the writer, Hannah Louise Shearer. They called her up and they're like, look, this script is fucked. We need some pages here, and you need to help us. And she's like, fuck off. Like, we're in the middle of a strike. I'm not going to cross the picket lines. Like,
I'm no scab.
Yeah, seriously. And so they're like, look, here's what we're going to do. We're going to write this over the phone, me and Legato, and you just tell us whether you think this dialogue works for you. And she basically yes-no'd the stuff that Berman and Legato were pitching over the phone. So
charitable of her.
I know. I completely agree. Like, that sounds like a pretty sketchy end around of the strike, but that's how they ended up getting a completed script and having something shootable. But I mean, once you know that bit of trivia, I think a lot of the slapdashedness of the story makes a lot of sense.
Sure.
Kind of strange.
Hmm.
What did you think of it?
I mean, like, I think that in the last episode, neither of us remembered this episode. I think that when we press stop on recording this, I will forget this episode.
I never want to see it again.
No.
I think you could really put this on the Mount Rushmore of worst Star Trek episodes that we've seen. And I don't know what kicks it off if it can't be top four.
It's like Code of Honor and this are a lock, and then there's like 7 or 8 other episodes from this season competing for the other two spots.
Yeah, it's, I don't know what could possibly knock it off. It was pretty bad. Did you, as you were watching, find a drunk Shimoda figure in this episode?
Incredible. Drunk Shimoda!
Yeah, you know, I mean, like, this is one of those ones where, like, almost everything is a drunk Shimoda.
Yeah.
But I'm going to say, just to, like, because this episode, like, really needs a hand, I'm going to give everything the benefit of the doubt and give it to Picard as a character, because you know his whole backstory with Janice is that he dithered around and was supposed to meet her at the Café des Artistes, and it was supposed to be this like big romantic moment, and he no-showed her. He stood her up.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that that's such an insanely dick move in a highly connected, intercommunicative world like he lives in, you know? Like it's so much more advanced than cell phones, as we've talked about. You can just say Picard to Janice.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
she will be receiving you loud and clear. And like, he completely ghosted her. Like, it's just such a drunk Shimoda move.
Yeah, I think my pick might be Janice, the other side of that coin, because why isn't she really mad at him for that? Like, they had a future planned out together. They were going to do the thing.
Right.
And then he ghosts her, never sees her, for I don't know how many years have passed, and she's oddly really happy to see him. I mean, setting aside the fact that she has saved her life and the life of her husband, but I would have expected a little more attitude out of her over that initial letdown, and there just wasn't. Like, she was more than willing to flirt with him.
Yeah, I mean, and especially considering the fact that she is the type of girl who will go on a fucking... on a fucking planetoid for 15 years.
Yeah.
Because of who she married, you know? Like, she's down to sit in the captain's quarters reading a book, you know? There's no reason they couldn't have been together, and he, you know, like, there's plenty of commissioned officers in Starfleet that have civilian spouses.
Yeah, and she's, like, objectively attractive. Like, yeah, she's not planetoid hot. She's, like... legit hot. She doesn't need to go.
She's Paris hot, man.
Yeah. She doesn't need to go with fucking evil John Lithgow and hang out on the planetoid. Like, she could make something of herself somewhere else.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, that's not fun. That's not fun in the Shimoda sense, but it's just Shimoda in the confusing behavior sense to me.
That is the basis upon which this episode is getting its Shimodas awarded.
Right. Right. Technical Shimoda. What do we got cooking on next week's episode, Ben?
Next week's episode is Conspiracy. Captain Picard and Commander Riker travel to Earth to investigate a conspiracy in the highest ranks of Starfleet Command.
They go to chew gum and blow up people's heads, and they're all out of chewing gum.
Yeah, man.
I'm so excited for this episode. I've been
yeah.
When we hatched the idea of doing a podcast about Star Trek: The Next Generation, this was the episode I was thinking of.
Nice. Well, I will see you on the other side, unless you have some critic reactions to throw at me.
I'm not interested. I utterly do not care about any reaction. However, I do want to read a couple of these clips because I think they might offer a nice counterbalance to our excitement. One reviewer gave it a score of 4 out of 10. That guy is clearly like the Russian judge at the Olympics. Certain parts of the plot were idiotic, and the admirals reminded him of a Bond villain convention. I guess that's not super off the mark there. I could see that.
Neither of those are crazy things to say.
No, but other people are calling it a definite high point in the first season. And I would be inclined to agree. It wouldn't take much, but this one this one definitely is up there.
Yeah, I remember this as being super fun to watch. So
yeah, let's get to it.
Let's adjourn so that, you know, we can watch that next episode and make a podcast about it for next week's The Greatest Generation.
Let's do it. If you want to reach out to us, as always, we're on Twitter. I'm at Cut for Time.
And I'm at Benjamin R.
Yeah, thanks a lot to our DJ, who has made both our theme music and our interstitial music. He's Dark Materia. You can find the Picard song on both his website and about 1,000 others. Go get it.
Just Google the Picard song, and you'll find it.
Yeah, great show, Ben.
We'll be back at you next time with another great Next Generation episode, another terrible The Greatest Generation episode. I've been Ben Harrison.
I've been Adam Pranica. See ya.
Bye.
Make it so. Jean-Luc Picard.